My name is Kate Uslin. I work at a local health department in Charlotte, North Carolina. I want to also acknowledge my colleague, Scott Prochelbel, who is sitting over there in the corner. He has contributed lots of time and effort to helping everyone in North Carolina get on this air monitoring train. He's helped us train volunteers, helped us download all of our data, and translate it into meaningful and useful data. So thank you to him for all his help. We use this image because in North Carolina, with our preemptive law, we really do feel like we are being held hostage in a way. Unfortunately, our politicians are not at the point where they're ignoring the preemptive law, like in South Carolina. And so we do have a number of obstacles similar to South Carolina, but it's actually not all doom and gloom. We do have a few things going for us. As we saw in the correctional facilities, we are one of the few states that have banned tobacco in our correctional facilities. And we have also become leaders in smoke-free hospital grounds, where almost 80% of our hospitals have voluntarily adopted tobacco-free ground policies. So that has been extremely exciting to watch. Also, we have a really exciting tobacco-free college program, which has, just in the last year or two, we've had, I think, almost 10 colleges pass tobacco-free ground policies, and that program is really picking up steam. But, and of course, on the statewide level, we do have a number of efforts going to try to either overturn our preemptive law or to get a comprehensive smoke-free workplace law put into effect. And so while those efforts are going on, at the local level, we've been trying to think of ways to sort of help get the momentum going for those efforts, but also encourage local businesses to voluntarily go smoke-free. And of course, we've been out there for 15 years trying to get restaurants and businesses to go smoke-free voluntarily, and I think it felt like we'd kind of plateaued, the message was getting old, we really needed to spice it up, I think. And this was before the most recent Surgeon General report was released. So what we did, we heard about the Roswell Park Cancer Center and the work that they were doing in monitoring the air quality. And they were mostly going to states and looking at the air before and after smoke-free laws were going into effect. Of course, we didn't have that law going into effect in our state. But we thought that we could just go and monitor the air in different venues and use the data to encourage both local business owners to go smoke-free voluntarily, as well as use the data to show our local elected officials really what was going on in these venues. So this is the machine that Roswell Park used. They trained us how to use it, and we bought a few of them to use in the state. It's called the SidePack Monitor. It has a laser that looks at the air and monitors PM2.5, which has been found to be an acceptable marker for secondhand smoke exposure. And we decided to look at the air quality in restaurants, bars, and then in bowling alleys. And then the following year, this past year, we looked at bingo halls and a local airport. So the simple science behind this, these machines measure the respirable suspended particles, specifically particulate matter in the air that is smaller than 2.5 microns, which is 100 times smaller than a human hair. So we're talking about very small particles. But these are particles that have been shown to have an effect on our health, a negative effect. The EPA has set limits for exposure to this PM2.5. They have said 15 micrograms per cubic meter should be the average annual exposure, and 35 micrograms per cubic meter for an average 24-hour level exposure. And this used to be 65, and just last year they moved it down to 35, which they found that even levels of 65 could pose some adverse health effects. This is the EPA air quality index. You can see the PM2.5 levels, the third column over, So you can see levels over 250 are considered to be pretty hazardous. And then again, the levels have been moved up to 41 to 65 is now considered unhealthy for sensitive groups. So this is a nice, bold, colorful chart we take wherever we go now and show them, you know, where the levels in specific venues fall on this EPA index. So this is just one of the examples of the data that we collected. Back in 2006, we went and looked at 32 restaurants, bars, and bowling alleys. And what we really wanted to get out of this was a way to really quantify just, you know, the levels of the dangerous levels of exposure to secondhand smoke in these venues. But also, as you can see here in venue 2, this was a venue that had designated smoking areas. And our monitor person was sitting in a smoke-free, you know, the non-smoking section. And this is where they actually walked through the smoking section to go to the bathroom. These next two venues are places that were more like bar-like settings where people could smoke anywhere. So we really wanted to be able to show people, you know, that places with designated areas really are not safer. And that was important because we knew that that idea was still out there, that you could go to a restaurant and sit in the non-smoking section and be safe. So that was really great to be able to show that it's really not much different. And this was our smoke-free kind of control down here. This is the level. It should be a little bit lower, actually, 35 of kind of what has been determined to be a safe level of exposure. So then we were able to summarize that the air quality was about 12 times worse in venues that did allow smoking anywhere, and about 5 times worse in those that did have separated areas, but still is quite a bit worse, and in the level that is considered to be unhealthy for certain groups compared to the smoke-free venues. And there's that 35 limit again. So we released this data in October of last year. We held a big press release, and we actually invited Dr. Sargent, who was one of the authors of the Montana Helena Hart study, and he came and spoke to members of the press and doctors and health professionals. And this really did pick up quite a bit of press in the, you know, in the local area. This is the front page of the Charlotte newspaper. Of course, they always tend to use a picture of a smoker, but we really got a lot of press and a lot of different publications. There was radio time, there was TV time, and it did get picked up in media outlets across the state, which is exactly what we wanted to happen. So that was exciting. After that, we worked to encourage the local airport to adopt a smoke-free policy, which they did after a few years of pressure, and that was very exciting because they're one of the few airports in a kind of tobacco-growing state and a southeastern state to pass a totally smoke-free policy for the airport. They agreed to let us come in and monitor the air before and after, which was a lot of fun for us. This graph kind of shows the before and after. The red is obviously the before. You see some very high levels, and Scott back there who did a lot of air monitoring in our prisons said that this one venue, the only place worse than that was on death row. So that was a good anecdote to use. And of course, we saw very significant drops the day after the policy went into effect. This again shows the difference. We saw, you know, 96% decrease in 2.5 levels with that policy change. So that's been really exciting to have that data and to be able to share that with the airport and with other airports. And then thinking, what else could we go monitor there? You know, it's so much fun to do. We're just always looking for new venues to do it. And we were thinking, if and when Charlotte, North Carolina ever does get a smoke-free policy passed, which we are confident will soon, but we thought about what venues would be most likely to be excluded. And, you know, thought about how private halls and kind of clubs often get excluded from those policies. And since bingo halls are often, you know, classified as that kind of venue, and they are a place where so many very vulnerable populations go, both low-income and very elderly people are going, this might be a good place to go monitor the air to try to encourage local and voluntary policies in the meantime while all of our other activities are going on. So we had a lot of fun playing bingo, but we did see a lot of kind of very disturbing images of people on oxygen tanks with masks on, holding inhalers along with all their Lucky Charms. And as you would expect, the air quality was pretty horrific in most of them. The average in smoke-free was about 11, which is definitely considered safe. And then the average in the smoking ones was 241, which is borderline very hazardous. So again, it's sort of what you would expect to see, but just having a way to really quantify it and to provide local data to these business owners and to local elected officials is what's so great about using this method. This is just an example of one of the charts. You can see it reaching 600 PM2.5. And I was at this venue. It was very painful. I was suffering for days. And you can see 25 times worse air quality than in the smoke-free bingo halls. Sorry about this. So outcomes. Again, we did have considerable media attention from the initial release of just the restaurant bar bowling alley data back in October. We had numerous letters to the editor, which kept it going in the media for quite a while. The hits to our local smoke-free dining website were 10 times higher than the previous month. It was picked up across the state. We have a local smoke-free Mecklenburg group that has an online petition, and they saw their signatures go up quite a bit. We were able to share the data with public policy makers, which led to 4 out of 6 town councils, 1 city council, 1 board of county commissioner voting in support of a local authority resolution. And after we shared the bingo hall with 1 fraternal organization they were so moved by it that they voted right then on the spot that they would adopt a smoke-free bingo policy. However, since then, they've had a total shift in leadership and it's been put on hold, unfortunately. But we're still working with them and hoping that their new people get on board. I think that is it. The take-home messages, of course, are obviously that we know smoke-free venues and workplaces are much safer than those that still allow smoking, and that this indoor air monitoring offers kind of a new perspective. It helps us quantify the dangers. It gives this raw data to decision makers to support policy changes and creates unlimited media opportunities that can help you keep your message in the news and hopefully lead to significant policy changes. And I think we're all done now. So. Do we have time for questions?
Let's give our presenters another round of applause, please.